Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, thousands of Indigenous people and their allies took part in the People versus Fossil Fuels mobilization in Washington, D.C. They demanded President Biden declare a climate emergency, divest from fossil fuels, and launch a just renewable energy revolution. Protesters also delivered 1 million petitions to the White House demanding the end to Enbridge's Line 3 oil pipeline, which will carry nearly 1 million barrels of tar sands per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. And we discussed Line 3 on yesterday's show. Over the course of last week, over 655 people were arrested. Just as we were about to connect with Joy Braun, who traveled to D.C. from South Dakota, she was being arrested. Joy is now home and is joining us to give a report back. Joy Braun is a frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. Joy was one of the first campers at Standing Rock's Sacred Stone Camp, and Joy is a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. She was arrested twice at last week's actions in D.C., and she joins us from Eagle Butte, South Dakota. Hi, Joy. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. It's so good to hear your voice.
Well, it's great to have you, Joy. I mean, just as we were going to connect with you, you were getting arrested. So tell us about those two times that you got arrested.
Well, the first time, and I apologize for my voice. It's still recovering from all the chanting and everything. But the first time I was arrested was on Indigenous Peoples Day in front of the White House. And I was one of the last group too of Indigenous people right there at the front that was arrested. At first, they had used as they were crazy. The police, a lot of the allies walked away, but some of us who said no, we're not going to move. They drug Indigenous people away in those plastic zip ties.
Right.
They had used a sound cannon on us, an LRAD on us, which just made us get loud and laugh because, come on, we're used to that. And just kind of, you know, and so here they are announcing to the world, hey, we're doing this wonderful thing for Indigenous Peoples Day, and we're out at the White House going, you made promises to us that you were going to be a true climate president. And yes, you did stop Keystone XL, but you allowed Line 3 to go through. You're ignoring treaty rights on Line 5. And of course, Mountain Valley Pipeline is going through devastating sacred burial sites and historical sites that they didn't even know about.
Know, Joy, you mentioned the Indigenous proclamation by President Biden, and it really was incredible to see Indigenous grandmothers being arrested on Indigenous Peoples Day, which was last Monday.
Yeah. So on KC Hornet Camp, one of the Arponka matriarchs, and definitely, so her sons adopted me, so that's like my hunka or adopted mom. To see my mom get arrested, and then Joe K. Dowell from Oklahoma, another IEN worker for us, who's been hugely instrumental in getting masks to Indigenous people across Turtle Island and for COVID. And so to see them get arrested was really hard. And when they came to me at first, they were like, well, do we have to pull you out of your chair and zip tie you and drag you out? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. You got to figure it out. I was in a transport chair because I used a wheelchair, and they finally realized, oh, we could just unlock the brakes and pull you away.
I saw a video of that. You know, Joy, can you just talk about, I mean, a week-long action, and people have traveled to D.C. from all over the country. You mentioned Oklahoma. You traveled from South Dakota. I mean, these are people really on the front lines fighting for so much change, but also a lot of these people are the first to be affected by these pipelines.
Yeah, and not just pipelines. And we're talking about all fossil fuel development and infrastructure. So we're talking, we have people come from the Arctic. Indigenous relatives came from the Arctic and from Alaska. We had indigenous people come from the Bayou. We had people come from New York City because they would, you know, remember Ida came and they were flooded, right? And we have to remember that every single year, or last year alone, 168 people here in the United States were killed because of climate change. But in Ida, at least 42 people were killed because of Ida. We're not even done with hurricane season yet, right? So, and we're not even including all the devastation with the fires, and you have LNG projects down in Texas that don't have EIS is done, and in Tacoma LNG, it's huge Tacoma LNG plant with the Puyallup, they're violating treaty rights. So it's not just pipelines, it's all oil and gas infrastructure that we need to stop, we need to pause, we need to do a complete review of anything that was approved during Trump. But we absolutely need to pause and review everything because this is causing devastation for indigenous and black and brown people first and foremost, and disabled people like me. So I mean, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying.
Joy, what was your interaction, if any, with media last week? Because it looks like the national show Here and Now dedicated 6 minutes to the protests, but I still don't see anything on NPR, the Morning Edition or All Things Considered. And we've been talking about this over the last week, The Guardian, The Washington Post, and a few other national organizations. But other than that, not much.
Not a whole lot. The Post reached out really early and called me, and they said they were sending somebody from Ontario, and then somebody from New York came, and they did a pretty good job. CBS showed up, but I didn't see anything. I was on Democracy Now, me and Synecdoche Maupin, that who came up from the Arctic, she was on. And then we left there and then went to the Friday Action, which was led by the youth. And the youth were arrested. 10-year-olds were arrested.
10-year-olds?
10-year-olds were arrested.
Wow.
10 and 11-year-olds were arrested. So Love Hopkins, who was one of the original Standing Rock runners who came from Ocheti Shakoli Sacred Stone, who ran to Washington, D.C. when she was 6 years old. She's now 11, and she was arrested. So, or 10. So, yeah, 11. So we had 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds arrested on Friday.
And what did they do with these 10-year-olds?
They arrested them, they pushed them around a little bit, and then they separated them from their parents who were sitting there with them. So their parents were right there.
And then did they
process them? I was sitting in the back, kind of trying to act as a grandma, and then they wheeled me away. They took me away right away. They pushed them around. And my daughter, who's 27, she wasn't in the arrestable position. She was outside. Because they had put this big bike barricade around everybody. My daughter was outside of that, and she got pushed around, and so her whole right side is bruised up by the cops.
Wow.
And she wasn't even in the arrestable situation. So she ran off to go be with the drummers because she knew she'd be safe with the drummers.
Joy,
that's
do you scary. Know?
That's scary.
Did the 10-year-olds get processed? I mean, did they put them in a van? Or?
Oh, yeah, they were processed. They were processed separately and then brought back, but they were separated from their parents. And they were just given like a warning because they were so young. But the parents were arrested, and we were given, incommoding. I don't even know what incommoding means, but we were all incommoding, whatever that.
Wow. Well, Joy, I know that you need some rest because it was a week long of actions, and I know that your dog really missed you. I'm sure he's glad that you're home.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's amazing. We have a lawyer on actually in about 30 minutes, and we'll definitely ask her about the legalities around arresting 10-year-olds in D.C. So we're glad that you're home, and thank you so much for connecting with us, Joy.
Well, thank you, and thank you, everybody. And remember, still no dapple, and many we Tony water is life.
Thank you. Joy Braun is a frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, one of the first campers at Standing Rock Sacred Stone Camp, and a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. She was arrested twice at last week's actions in Washington. She was joining us from South Dakota. Joining us now is Hilary Beaumont. Hilary broke a story for The Guardian about how the Canadian company Enbridge has reimbursed Minnesota police $2.4 million for arresting and surveilling demonstrators. According to the Pipeline Legal Action Network, police have arrested more than 900 demonstrators who are trying to stop Line 3. Hilary Beaumont is a freelance investigative journalist based in San Francisco. Hi, Hilary. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, and thank you for being so patient there. We just got Joy this morning, so thanks for your patience. We wanted to ask you, Hilary, first off, how you got this information. You filed a public records request and learned that Enbridge reimbursed police $2.4 million for arresting and surveilling demonstrators?
Yeah, that's right. So basically, there had been a lot of different outlets covering the fact that there was this public safety escrow account set up by the state of Minnesota as a condition of Enbridge's Line 3 permits. So the state said, if you want to build this pipeline project, you have to fill this public safety escrow account with money to reimburse police for arresting protesters in Minnesota. And so throughout last winter and then through this summer, that number that was being reimbursed to the fund was kind of like ticking up over time as the protests were going on in Minnesota. And so I was really curious to see what police were reimbursing to this Enbridge account. So I put in a public records request asking for the receipts and then just started going through them. And some of what I found was just really surprising.
Before we talk about what you found, we throw these company names around, and I'm sure a lot of people are not familiar with Enbridge. So Enbridge is Canada's biggest oil pipeline company. In July, Enbridge reported earnings of $1.1 billion, according to Reuters. Enbridge CEO Al Monaco's 2020 pay package was $17 million. What else can you tell us about this Canadian oil company, Enbridge?
So my experience with them as I'm a Canadian myself, I've been reporting on different pipeline projects in Canada over the last few years. And Enbridge comes up a lot because they have, older pipelines that were built in the 1960s through the U.S. and Canada, especially through Michigan and their Lakehead pipeline network. It was one of their pipelines that actually caused the biggest inland oil spill in the U.S. history, the Kalamazoo oil spill. So that's kind of what I understand them as a big Canadian company that has a cross-border network of pipelines transporting oil that a lot of us do still rely on, to be fair. But their pipelines are kind of breaking down, and just like Line 3, they're needing to start replacing them. And that's when these pipelines become flashpoints.
Right. And then just to remind listeners, so Enbridge is replacing this pipeline that would carry oil from, I have so many notes here. Let me just grab this. Here we go. It would carry oil, nearly 1 million barrels of tar sands per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. Now, Enbridge said that the oil has started flowing, but we spoke with an attorney yesterday who said that might not be the case. Do you have any updates on that, or have you been able to confirm any information on that?
So I'm not sure exactly what is going on with the pipeline now. That it was like it was in a position to, for the company to test the pipeline and fill it with oil. So I think that's the stage they're at right now, is just trying to test to see if they can pump oil through it. But they had said that they were going to start using and bring into service this pipeline.
Okay. Now, in your piece, you write that it is common for protesters opposing pipeline construction to face private security hired by companies, as they did during demonstrations against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we did stories about that, you know, a couple years ago. But you report that in Minnesota, a financial agreement with a foreign company has given public forces an incentive to arrest demonstrators. So the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, which regulates pipelines, decided that rural police should not have to pay for increased strain from Line 3 protests. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. In North Dakota, during the Standing Rock protests, what happened was the police that were in the state, and also the, you know, the militarized police force, eventually was paid back by the company building the Dakota Access Pipeline. The company contributed, you know, $15 million at the end of things. But what had happened that's different in Minnesota is that the state anticipated that there would be demonstrations against the Line 3 pipeline. They knew that that was coming. And they also anticipated that there would be human trafficking and violence associated with building the pipeline. And so what they did was they said, Enbridge, if you want to build this, you have to set up this public safety escrow account as a condition of your permit. So the reason it's different is because this was set up in advance as a condition of the permitting. And what it means is that police forces, as they're arresting protesters, they can reimburse things like their wages, equipment, meals to this account.
So what happened behind the scenes? If the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission said rural police should not have to pay for all of this, who ultimately makes these decisions? I mean, is there like a call that is set up to decide how this is going to happen?
I mean, my understanding is it was done publicly during the hearings process. I don't know too much about that, but it was understood during the hearings, like the Public Utilities Commission is the regulator for the pipeline, and they decided whether the pipeline needed to be replaced. And so the commissioners heard a lot of evidence from all sides saying, you know, Enbridge saying we need to replace this, people saying we need jobs from this pipeline construction. And then, of course, Indigenous people and allies saying that this is a really destructive project. And so the PUC at the end of the day thought, okay, we need to replace this because of leaks and spills that have happened over the last 15 years. And so if we replace this, we also anticipate that there would be violence associated with the project. And so we have to set up this fund. But my understanding is it was done within the public view. This wasn't a secret. This was understood as a part of the permitting process.
So let's get a little specific here, because you have so many numbers in your piece. I mean, I guess when you looked at all of these documents, what really stood out to you the most?
Yeah, there are so many examples that I could give you. But I mean, the first things that I noticed was I kind of expected, like, okay, police will probably reimburse equipment, you know. There had been some reporting by Aline Brown for The Intercept saying that in the early days, police had already reimbursed equipment. So that's what I was really expecting to find. But then when I actually got the receipts back, I was noticing, oh, wow, no, they're actually reimbursing police wages. Like, after police will work a full day, they'll go reimburse their wages to this account. They'll reimburse their meals for when they're out policing the pipeline, they're out responding to protests. They will literally send in their receipts for, you know, bacon cheeseburgers and, you know, Subway, and send that into this account and get reimbursed for it. So that's what really shocked me reading through these receipts. But I have lots of examples I can tell you if you're interested.
Yes, please.
So I think like one of the ones that stood out to me the most is that in July, Enbridge was drilling under a river in northern Minnesota, and protesters had kind of gathered around the site. They were camping out near the site, and police had thought, okay, protesters are probably going to do something next to this drill site. So they called for reinforcement from other county police. And they literally like put in emails that, you know, police were saying in the emails that I saw in the receipts that our job today is to protect the drill site and the pipeline workers. That was what their understanding was of the job that day. not to necessarily keep public safety, but to protect the drill site. And so at one point, demonstrators started running toward the fence, and they placed ladders up against the fence, and they started climbing over the fence. And police yelled at them, "You're under arrest, you're trespassing," but they didn't stop climbing. So then police hit them with pepper spray and rubber bullets, and the rubber bullets left bloody welts in people's skin. And this was a really, you know, horrifying, one of the most violent days of the protests throughout the summer. And then at the end of that day, you know, police reimbursed that to the Enbridge account, their wages for that day, their meals for that day, they were reimbursed. So I found that the Wright County Sheriff's Office had reimbursed about $27,000 in meals, wages, and benefits for working those days to protect the drill site.
And that's actually a pretty low number based on other things you found. You report that in December 2020, Cass County Sheriff's Office began, quote, proactive safety patrols of communities along the pipeline route. Up to August 6th, the Enbridge account reimbursed the sheriff over $849,000 for these patrols.
That's right. Yeah, I went back through, you know, all the receipts from Cass County, looked at specifically what they were for and added them up. And that was the total for the entire stretch. So Cass County, what they had done is they wrote in an email that they were going to initiate these public safety patrols. And they actually were meeting several times daily with Enbridge representatives about these safety patrols. So they really were, you know, planning things out with police, with Enbridge in advance. There were conversations happening about this. And I was really curious, like, you know, would they have done this if not for the money that was coming to them and being reimbursed frequently by Enbridge? And I had asked the sheriff of Cass County about that, and he was very adamant that he does not work for the pipeline company. He does not work for Enbridge. And he said that he responds appropriately to the public safety needs of the citizens and his community. And he really believes that he's operating independently. But I think that there's a fair question to be asked, like, how independent can you be from this company if you're receiving money from them to reimburse you for doing work around the protests?
You also requested comment from the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office, Grand Rapids Police Department, and McLeod County Sheriff's Office, but did not receive any responses by deadline. Have they since responded to you?
No, I reached out to a lot of different police agencies that I mentioned in the piece because I genuinely was curious, like, what they have to say for this. Like, do they really think that they're operating independently? But I didn't hear back from any other ones other than Cass County. I think one other, the Wright County Sheriff's Office that had pepper sprayed people that day, they just wrote back to say that they hadn't used rubber bullets. So that was all I got back from them.
And then asked if the company is directing police, an Enbridge spokesperson, Michael Barnes, wrote in an email, quote, "Officers decide when protesters are breaking the law or putting themselves and others in danger," end quote. Is that all you have heard so far from Enbridge?
I did hear back from Enbridge after we published the story. They are, you know, not happy with framing this as Enbridge paying police, but, like, that is what is happening. This, they are filling this account, and then police are reimbursing from this account. They had said also, and they didn't provide this comment when I first reached out to them, but they have said since then that they have to be careful about sensitive equipment, and they had a bomb threat at one point, and so that was their explanation for being in touch with police. But ultimately, you know, this is what is happening. They have also said that there's an independent account manager who decides, you know, what exactly to reimburse to police. So that is true. It's not that Enbridge is managing the account or anything like that. But at the end of the day, there is a flow of money from Enbridge to police who are policing the protests.
Have you heard from any state officials in Minnesota?
I didn't reach out to any state officials specifically for this story, but I know that there have been a number of Minnesota representatives as well as members of Congress who have written to the Biden administration calling out a lot of different things around the Line 3 pipeline, but also mentioning that they take issue with this Enbridge account and the fact that police are getting paid through it.
Jacobin reports that Minnesota's two Democratic U.S. Senators, Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, have ignored calls to stop Line 3. Have you been able to get any comment from Senators Klobuchar or Smith?
I haven't reached out to them for this specific article. This article was focused mainly on just what the receipts show, so I didn't reach out to them for this.
All right. Well, Hillary, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you making space to talk about Line 3.
Thank you. Hillary Beaumont is a freelance investigative journalist based in San Francisco, and you can find the piece she broke for The Guardian at yourcallradio.org. It's Revealed: Pipeline Company Paid Minnesota Police for Arresting and Surveilling Protesters. Enbridge picked up the tab for police wages, training, and equipment, and let county police know when it wanted demonstrators arrested. Coming up after a break, we'll speak with Tara Hauska, a tribal attorney who in late July was shot by police with rubber bullets, mace, and pepper balls at protest to stop Line 3. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to continue our discussions of arrests of protesters and Indigenous activists who are trying to stop Line 3. Joining us is Tara Hauska and Anishabe from the Kuchiching First Nation. Tara is a tribal attorney and founder of the Indigenous advocacy group, the Ginu Collective. In late July, Tara was shot by police with rubber bullets, mace, and pepper balls attempting to stop Line 3. Hi, Tara. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, how are you?
Well, Tara, you've been on the show many times talking about this. Can you just tell us what else are you learning about the relationship in this case between Enbridge, the state, and the police? I mean, that Guardian piece really looked at the dollars that are being transferred between Enbridge and the local police.
Yeah, and actually, since that piece came out, I mean, the number now is at just under $3 million that Enbridge has paid to local law enforcement to protect its pipeline. So the number is quite high. To put that in perspective, Enbridge has paid far less for damages it's caused to our water aquifers, piercing one of our water aquifers, than it has to paying our police, paying Minnesota's police to protect its property. I think as far as what I've learned, some of these FOIA requests that have now that are being published through places like The Guardian and The Intercept and all of that, Aline Brown has been reporting on Line 3 for quite some time as a local Minnesotan in New York City. But I think one of the more shocking things recently was probably learning about the fact that Enbridge's head of security actually used to be stationed in Nicaragua to suppress Indigenous resistance down there, where people are killed for doing this work. So I can only imagine what kind of track record they have, and that the security that was actually tasked in Minnesota specifically to Line 3 was the former personal security for Jeff Bezos. The connections run pretty deep.
Wow. Yeah, those are pretty strong connections. You know, the other thing, Tara, talking about what's going on there, just the tactics that are being used. Because if you don't have the cameras rolling, people just don't know what's going on. I mean, you were shot by police with rubber bullets, mace, and pepper balls in late July. And then More Perfect Union has such a devastating video of allies. And we're going to play a clip later in the show. But police are basically hitting pressure points right on the teeth, below the nose, and around the ears. And some of these activists said that they thought their eardrums were going to burst. And then when they went to the doctor, they were told that they had Bell's palsy as a result of these tactics.
Yeah, that footage was actually from our collective, all of
okay.
it. So
wow.
That was from us collaborating with More Perfect Union. Those are friends, those are people that were hosted here in the Maywug, in the camp that I'm calling you from, and it was pretty horrific to witness people who were here to stand up for this beautiful territory and coming back with paralysis on their faces and traumatized, really, really badly traumatized from listening to their friends screaming. Police officers that were telling them on one side, you know, because sometimes you're locked to each other, you know, if you let go, I'll stop hurting your friend, and their friend is screaming, you know, like that's been pretty serious torture, I think, and it's pretty, I think it's a dark thing that happened in the environmental movement in the United States, and it's something that really is not really, is not that widespread and known that right. that happened here. I'm surprised that more of the environmental movement is not uplifting and, like, aware of the fact that that did occur here, along with this relationship between police and this private industry.
You know, Tara, I did not know, because I follow More Perfect Union on YouTube, and that's how I found out about it. I didn't even realize that the video was taken from the GNU Collective. There's nothing about that on their website, so you might want to reach out to them. And, you know, just let them know that you all deserve credit for that. But you're right. I mean, it's only had 3,600 views, and I have been surprised that this has not gotten more attention, because you can tell these people are just completely traumatized, as anyone would be.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a moment where not only are you seeing what industry is willing to do, and seeing what police are willing to do if they're able to get away with it, because obviously there's not been any consequence. The governor of Minnesota said nothing when it was happening. The attorney general of Minnesota said nothing when it was happening. Instead, we've kind of been directed towards like a complaint process, you know, after the fact, after we've been hurt. And this didn't just happen once either. This happened in a series of events, to the point that we were sending people out with microphones on them and security measures to like have someone jump out to stop them from being hurt if they shouted a safe word. You know what I mean? Like that's like how afraid we were of people getting hurt, right? Like that this might happen to them if they chose to go stand in front of the pipeline. There's that, and then there's also just the notion and the reality of the fact that there were extraction teams, there were cut teams that were in place for years that were the standard practice. So there's a demonstration, someone's walked through a piece of equipment, they'll call the cut team comes in and takes like, you know, however long construction is blocked during that time, right? But instead, these sheriffs chose not to do that. They chose to hurt people. They chose to torture people instead of calling the extraction team. So it's not like they didn't have another option. They actually wanted to hurt people.
Tara, what has your experience been like? I mean, as I said, in late July, you were shot with rubber bullets, mace, and pepper balls. What has that experience been like for you, and just seeing other people who have dealt with, you know, being shot by police? And again, if this is not being taped, then it's not being seen. And if you don't have media there, people are not going to know what's going on there.
Well, and the flip side of that is, even if we do have media there, that it doesn't seem like these stories are really reaching the widespread audience that I hope that it would. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
it's, right.
like I said, you're in a situation where you've got folks who are wanting to take a stand, who are coming out and learning how to organize, or learning how to, you know, engage in direct action or whatever, right? Like that's what we're able to do. And learning about the land, learning about the treaties, learning about decolonization and all these different aspects of what a resistance looks like, and also what reconnection with the earth looks like. And then them experiencing these awful things on front lines, you know, as we're trying to do the best that we can to support people through, you know, trying to have rallies, or, you know, as soon as we know about something, then we're like showing up with like, you know, people holding signs or something like that, you know. And even in those situations, we've had people that have been arrested, and some have served jail time for holding a sign on the side of the road.
Wow.
You know, that happened. We actually had one of our first convictions here in Hubbard County, the same county that used torture techniques on people, where they arrested 30 people in the ditch that were holding signs and charged them all with misdemeanors and sent one of them to jail. They were in jail for over 30 days for holding a sign, constitutionally demonstrating. Mm. The judge said that the Constitution didn't apply to their situation. openly in court. Like, that's what's been happening in these communities. So I would say, like, lessons learned are apparently industry is able to run however it wants in some communities, and that the Democrats who are in power did nothing to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Tara, do you know, is the oil flowing now?
So it is flowing through portions of Line 3. It has actually not gone through the section that was fought here in Minnesota. I'm guessing probably because the pipe has many different integrity issues. Because they slammed it into the ground as fast as they did, they were working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, trying to get this thing done as quickly as possible. They were drilling six different rivers at a time. I mean, that's absolutely an insane pace of work. There was 5,000 people up here in northern Minnesota. They did everything they could to get Line 3 done as quickly as possible, and it shows.
What is next for the Stop Line 3 movement?
I think, as you saw, there was a lot of demonstrations and a large-scale push out in Washington, D.C., where almost 700 people were arrested during the course of the week, where you have Native people being arrested inside the Department of the Interior on Indigenous Peoples Day. I think there's a reckoning that's happening, not just with Line 3, but with many of these fossil fuel expansion projects, which is we're tired of listening to promises and to politicians telling us, okay, well, we're going to work on that, and we're going to reach net zero, and we're going to eventually transition away, and we're going to put forward this clean energy bill that we're then going to gut. You know, I mean, that's what's happening with the Build Back, you know, infrastructure bill, right, is they're cutting all the pieces that are actually about emissions.
Right.
We're tired of it, and I think people will continue to stand, and a lot of folks that were out here fighting during this pandemic learned a lot and are taking that home with them.
Well, Tara, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take good care.
Thank you. Tara Hauske is a tribal attorney and founder of the Indigenous advocacy group Ginu Collective. In late July, Tara was shot by police with rubber bullets, mace, and pepper balls for standing up to Line 3. Joining us now is Mara Verhaden-Hilliard, co-founder of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, a public interest legal organization dedicated to the defense of human and civil rights. The Partnership for Civil Justice Fund has been preparing the legal challenge to protect and advance water protectors' constitutional rights. Hi, Mara. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Great to have you, Mara. Just a basic question here. When you have a company like Enbridge paying police in Minnesota, and this is documented in many places, we just spoke with the Guardian reporter who broke that story. Can you just tell us what is legal when you have a multinational corporation paying police to arrest and surveil citizens?
Well, I think we have to step back and look at what the situation is that we're faced with. I do want to point out that Guardian article is a great article, but it's important to also recognize that Aline Brown at The Intercept actually broke these stories about the payments and about Enbridge and the interrelationship some months back, actually earlier this year. So it's always important to recognize the great work that people are doing on this issue. What's happening with Enbridge and the corporation and Line 3 is so critical to understand in terms of the extraordinary threat that it poses, not only to fundamental democratic rights, but to really the concept of free speech, democracy, and the civilian population's ability in the United States to take action and respond to threats to their community. At Line 3, as part of the permit that Enbridge was given by the Public Utilities Commission to really devastate the land and the waters of northern Minnesota, they were required to create what's called the Public Safety Escrow Trust Fund, in which Enbridge pours limitless sums of money. And the sheriff's departments along the route, well, in fact, sheriff's departments anywhere in northern Minnesota that come to work along the route in support of Enbridge's operations, then invoice that fund. So what this has created is this massive financial incentivization for the public law enforcement entities that are operating ostensibly in the public interest to take action in service of the corporation's pecuniary interest, that is getting that pipeline through against community opposition, and to do so by repressing that opposition. So every time law enforcement, all these different counties up at line three, act against water protectors and land defenders, they're able to turn around and bill for it. And it's not only incentivizing as an institutional level the sheriff's departments, which are, of course, getting massive funding into their budgets from this corporation as they repress water protectors, but it's incentivizing the individual officers, the deputies, the police who are up there, the sheriff's deputies, because the amount of overtime that they're getting that we can see in the records that have been returned on this, that's an extraordinary amount of overtime for individual officers. So while we often see growing privatization of police forces, and that's something that our organization challenges in litigation, as do other civil rights lawyers, challenging the privatization of police, which comes through different means. Sometimes it's private security who work in service and directly paid by a corporation, or at other times it's public police officers who basically moonlight or are detailed to a private corporation. This is a new circumstance where you have the police, the law enforcement officers who are on duty, on public duty, on the job that they're supposed to be fulfilling, in, supposedly in service to the community, actually acting to serve the corporate interests and directly, indirectly being paid by the corporation, but through this public safety escrow trust that the corporation funds.
Okay, so thank you for that explanation. And then going back to the question of what is legal, we're going to play a clip of some of the allies who were trying to stop Line 3, who said that as a result of police hitting pressure points, they ended up with Bell's palsy. I mean, it's just traumatizing to even watch them speak. So what is legal here, given that relationship you just described?
Well, we're working with the folks who were subject to the torture. And this is the issue of legality. We have not encountered this structure previously, and that's why we are preparing a legal challenge right now. Our organization, the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, and its project, the Center for Protest Law and Litigation, which can be found at protestlaw.org, we are preparing a legal challenge to what has happened at Line 3, to the Public Safety Escrow Trust, to the constitutional rights issues and due process issues that are in play here. Because if this becomes an acceptable model, we are going to see this proliferate around the country. And you can imagine in any community, anywhere in the United States, where a community is standing up to a corporation that is devastating its land or its water, or that is acting against the interests of workers, anytime that people want to stand up and fight, what does a corporation need to do now? All it needs to do is create this fund where the on-duty official police agencies can tap in, get incentivized to act in the service of the corporation and act against the people. So we believe we have to stop it. We are preparing to file litigation to stop it, because we believe it is not a legal structure. We believe that the way that it operates is unconstitutional and fundamentally unsound. Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
The folks that were being tortured up at Line 3, too, and I want to really address what Tara was saying, what Tara Hosko was saying, which is so crucial. The torture is completely gratuitous and intentional, and being carried out by a lead sheriff as well as his deputies, the same sheriff that our office already is litigating against. We had to get we got a restraining order against Sheriff Corey Okus up in Hubbard County at line three because of his illegal blockade of the GNU collective. And they were blockading this collective. They were depriving people of the ability to drive on a driveway in and out of a private property. They began charging people with gross misdemeanor criminal offenses for driving on the driveway in and out of their property. They were brutally arresting other people. This situation up there has escalated and escalated and escalated. And then we see the torture. We see the torture being carried out, this vicious, cruel torture, which the outcome of it has been facial paralysis, which looks like Bell's palsy. It's not necessarily Bell's palsy, which is its own diagnosis. It's a facial paralysis from nerve damage. Mm. And this is what's going on up there. This is what's being allowed to happen by Keith Ellison. This is what's being allowed to happen by Walt's governor. This is what's being allowed to happen by the Biden Justice Department. So it is crucial that we and everyone else that wants to fight for the ability of people to be able to speak out, to come together in collective action and to engage in nonviolent protest, that we have to fight this and we have to stop what happened there and make sure it can't happen anywhere else.
Well, let's hear a clip from Line 3 pipeline protesters who said that they were left with partial facial paralysis. This video was put together by More Perfect Union and the footage is from the GNU Collective. Here's that clip.
And he took my head again and started pressing on my pressure point again. And then I felt him put all of his weight on it. And that's when I got really scared. And I kind of felt like my eardrum was going to break. And then he moved to my teeth and like right here and like started pressing up into my nose. And I felt my like my teeth were going to fall out.
When I saw the doctor, I tried to explain what had been happening to me, and he informed me that I had Bell's palsy, that it could be temporary or it could be permanent, that this could be for the rest of my life.
They did give me the diagnosis of Bell's palsy on the right side of my face. They got me off the bed and put me back in cuffs and took me to the jail. And when they tried to take my mugshot, I really tried to smile the entire time they were trying to take the picture, because even when I do it now, you can see that this side of my face doesn't move.
I was charged with felony theft, which has a maximum penalty of up to 10 years in prison. I was charged with gross misdemeanor trespass on critical infrastructure at the behest of energy companies, to specifically criminalize people who are fighting fossil fuel projects and fighting energy projects. These charges and the actions of law enforcement, people should see that it's actually a growing trend. So while the state of Minnesota, while the Biden administration, while the U.S. government decides to expand fossil fuel infrastructure and allow companies to destroy the water and destroy the earth, while they fail to do their job to protect the earth, people are having to protect the earth on their own, and we're being called terrorists.
You can watch that entire clip with interviews with other Line 3 pipeline protesters. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Mara Verheyden-Hilliard is co-founder of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund. And we only have a few minutes left, Mara. I've just been so surprised that this has not gotten more media attention.
I think everyone who's been involved in the struggle at Line 3, and of course, most significantly, the on-the-ground, indigenous-led water protectors, land defenders, and everyone who came to join and stand in support, has been shocked at the real sort of cloak that's been placed over what has happened at Line 3 by much of the media. And it's really so damaging to all of us, not only to the people at Line 3, but to anyone that cares about fundamental democratic rights, to free speech, to our ability to come together collectively to fight. If they're able to get away with what happened up there, we are going to see this occurring on a level that none of us will be able to tolerate on a national scale.
In our remaining minute, can you tell us what your group is planning to do to ensure that this does not become the norm, where you've got corporations paying police to take part in you know, torturing protesters who are, in this case, trying to stop an oil pipeline.
We are preparing litigation, and we've been working on that litigation and investigating in order to bring the case to stop this practice and to have this practice ruled unlawful and unconstitutional. We have been working with folks on the ground, and we've been up at Line 3 over this past year. And we've also been working with people in providing criminal defense support to folks at Line 3, as well as civil litigation at different points. But on this particular issue, we are preparing the challenge to the Public Safety Escrow Trust, to that structure, to the interrelationship between the police and the corporation that we think is violative of the most fundamental basic constitutional rights. And it's a structure that we believe cannot stand.
What can the public do about this?
I think that people should really try and reach out in all ways they can to raise this issue, to tell their neighbors, to tell their friends, to communicate with the media, to demand that there's coverage of this, and to support the water protectors and the people on the ground at Line 3 who need the support. There's still hundreds of people who are facing charges. We are also administering a funding pool to try and support criminal defense for water protectors who are being targeted for their work at Line 3. We urge people to come to our website, protestlaw.org, where you can learn more about how to support the work we're doing, to go to GNU Collective's website. There are a lot of places to plug in, and everyone is needed to do their part here.
Mara Verheyden-Hilliard is co-founder of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, a public interest legal organization dedicated to the defense of human and civil rights. They've been preparing a legal challenge to protect and advance water protectors' constitutional rights. Mara, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And again, you can find that video at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance and Joanne Marr for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.